what makes a man a man? If I ask you to picture a masculine man, a traditional classic man's man, what comes to mind? Do you think of a cowboy, a John Wayne-y character, something from an old cigarette ad, or a soldier from an old propaganda poster? What's a modern man? What's a 21st century man? And how do all those stereotypes about masculinity affect young men and boys who are trying to figure out their place in the world? From time to time, Hunter Johnson joins us from The Man Cave, which tackles young men's emotional health and intelligence around the country. Hunter, thanks for being here.
Thanks so much for having me again, Josh.
Great to talk to you again. What do you think about, I mean, are stereotypes helpful or unhelpful in general for young men?
Well, I think we're building on our last catch-up, Joshua. We're talking about rites of passage. The element of stereotypes is something that often comes up in our work, both at Man Cave and the other business we run, which is called Stuff, which I can talk to in just a moment. But one of the biggest pressures we see after working with tens of thousands of young men right now is that they feel an expectation or a pressure to fulfill a certain script or an archetype or a representation of what an Aussie man should be. And it opens up a really interesting conversation with teenage boys who often have either been role-modeled masculinity in the home setting or it's been impacted by the media that they consume. But it gives them a chance to really kind of open up that question of what are the traditional aspects of masculinity? What do we want to hold on to and what do we want to let go of? And, you know, I think stereotypes are obviously a way that we can create a generalization for something so that we can try and understand it. And like many things, stereotypes can have their, you know, the good side, but also, you know, they can have things that aren't very constructive. And I think, as we often talk about, Josh, is we're at such an inflection point for masculinity. It's really kind of going through so much change right now. The expectations, the pressure, the standards are evolving significantly. And I think we're left with a really confusing time.
1-300-222-702 is the phone number. I'd love to hear from you about what you think the stereotype of a great man is in the 21st century. Can you think of examples of masculinity that you aspire towards or that you would want the younger men in your life to look up to? Is there a conversation that you've had with other men, either with mates and colleagues or with someone from a different generation than you, maybe even a son, about what it means to be a man? And have you tried to deal with the expectations that different stereotypes can raise? 1-300-222-702. How are you doing with your idea of stereotypical masculinity in 2023? The text line is 0467-922-702 as Hunter Johnson joins us, the founder of The Man Cave. Hunter, we sort of move through the world, I think, with a fairly stereotypical stereotype, if I can say that, of masculinity, of, you know, real men don't cry, they're gruff, they're tough, that is not a stereotype that my effete inner city circle of people growing up in the 90s and noughties experienced. I mean, my stereotype of masculinity, of aspirational masculinity, was a male who is intensely respectful and deferential towards women, almost painfully so, I'd have to say, and the sort of the way of demonstrating one's virtue was by ensuring that you're always on the right side of any gender conversation. And so I do see that as well. I mean, I see the phenomenon of, especially on social media, the kind of preening modern male. And of course, there's all the toxic masculinity on social media as well. But it seems like there are these two parallel stereotypes where there's the toxic masculinity version of the male stereotype. And then there's the hyper progressive, bending over backwards to prove one's fealty to feminism version of masculinity.
Yeah, and I'd almost say there's a couple versions in between that spectrum. You know, there's definitely men who have grown up who have been very impacted by some, I would say, some very old school masculine behavior that's shaped their trust in masculine role models. And it's interesting, a lot of the work that we do with teenage boys, that one of the biggest wounds that they carry is what I'll call their father wound, where their father figure, whether it's a mentor or if they do have a father in their life, wasn't there at a certain time where they needed unconditional love. What we often find is that's one of the biggest, I'll just call it a sacred wound that they carry, that if they're able to work with that, understand it, you know, get the right support structures around integrating that wound, it becomes an amazing strength. And obviously it shapes, you know, the man they are, whether they choose to be a father or just a responsible role model in communities. But that's something we've definitely seen, is this, kind of pushing back of, well, I've only been exposed to very harsh masculine role models and I don't want to treat anyone like that. In fact, it's caused a bit of confusion around what type of man I want to be. But we also know, and, you know, similar to, you know, the men that you, Josh, grew up with, that there are extraordinary male role models who are, you know, full of integrity, live a life of service, that aren't about, you know, the flashy cars and the cigars, but are actually about being a, you know, a good man who has the option or the range in his identity to be stoic, to be strong, to hold himself together, but also has the range to be emotional, to be vulnerable, to ask for help. And it's a really tricky thing to find, I guess, the training ground to practice that range, because there is so many subtle and sometimes not so subtle cues that start to shape our version of masculinity from the earliest moments of our boyhood. You know, simple examples of, you know, if a boy's running down the road and trips over, you know, do we tell him to toughen up, you'll be right? And do we treat, you know, a young woman or a little girl, do we have the same type of conversation? And of course, I just want to come back to, it's so important that we remain, you know, grounded and strong, and we raise strong men. And we also need to start looking at the other side of it, is that when those narratives or those stereotypes are so constricting, it does cause a shackling. And we start to see that the lack of help seeking behavior, effectively asking for help really gets stagnated. And that's where we see the kind of the ripple effects into their own mental health, their substance abuse, incarceration rates, or, you know, violence inside of relationships.
1-300-222-702 is the phone number if you'd like to be part of the conversation about stereotypes of masculinity for young men and boys in 2023. I'd love to hear from you. Kim is on the line from Parramatta. G'day, Kim.
How are you, Josh? How are you?
What do you reckon? Good.
Well, I don't necessarily think the stereotyping is one thing, but what's stereotype? But the thing is that I think it's more or less forgotten, not so much changed. I think that men have always sort of had this sort of sense of daring about them, so that's just sort of innate thing, right? But I think that men also, really, in my view, is that they have the heart of a lion and really the soul of a poet. Now, if you use that all together, that's really, you know, the masculinity, in my view. And those things that you've touched on in relation to inner city, I mean, the soul of the poet type situation. But men, you know, have daring, they're risk takers, they're more inclined to do really something stupid, like jump off the tree, I don't know, try to fly it. And women are going to say, well, that's ridiculous, don't do that. But the thing is that it's the heart of the lion and soul of the poet. It's really a combination of those two aspects, in my view, is so. Those things have been forgotten.
I like that.
They need to come back.
Yeah, that's good, Kim. Thank you. What do you make of that, Hunter? That phrase, heart of a lion, soul of a poet. Yeah.
I also like that. I wrote that down. I think that was great. I think it's it did make me reflect, Josh, on like last time we were talking about rites of passage and how important that is in the, you know, for the structured transition into adulthood. And there's a saying in the rite of passage, community, which is uninitiated boys will burn down the village just to feel the heat. So uninitiated boys will burn down the village just to feel the heat. And so what we know, particularly with young men, is that they will test their boundaries. They will test authority. They will test their sense of invincibility. And often we see that through risk-taking activity. And whether that gets shaped positively, you know, in something like a heart of a lion, where that could be channeled into constructive challenge, or we also notice, and whether it's biological or conditioning, that's to be discussed, but we also know there is this desire to push out and to test, and often that can be done in really, really unhealthy ways. But the thing I'm probably most interested in is, where do we go to cultivate the souls of these poets? You know, where are these environments where young men get cracked open and their soul or their spirit or their personality really gets to flourish? And I think a really limiting part of that is the emotional vocabulary that, you know, just by nature of experience that many young men don't get to cultivate. And we see it in our programs, absolutely, that, you know, the one, when they begin, it's like, you know, opening up a conversation is often with a few, grudges and, you know, weird sounds coming out. But by the end, once they're able to articulate themselves a bit more, they can articulate their emotional world. They can take more responsibility, but then they start to express more. And that's one of the most foundational things of humanity, is to express our inner world and share it with the outer world. So Josh, I'm interested for you, like, what does that resonate? How does that resonate for you around the soul of a poet?
Yeah, I mean, I love it, but that's because that is definitely the stew that I grew up in a creative family, in, you know, growing up in the inner west of a big city with the, you know, in a broadly culturally progressive environment. There was never a lack of that. But I mean, it was the flip side for me and my peers, I think, was in finding ways to articulate the non-poetic side of ourselves in ways that weren't toxic. I mean, I was lucky enough to have an uncle in New Zealand who lived on a farm, and so we would go over there annually and, you know, shooting a gun and going eeling and going fishing and all of that. That side of man stuff, you know, quote unquote man stuff, of course anyone can do it, but it definitely fed a part of me that was not fulfilled by going to, by the hippy dippy environs of the school environment that I was raised in.
Yeah, I think it's really, you know, if we zoom out a little bit, it's only in very, very recent times we've lived such, you know, dare I call it civilized and domesticated lives. So we've got, you know, millennia of background in our DNA that is a desire to be in nature, to be around, you know, whether it is hunting, fishing, whatever, or living in harmony with nature, whatever that looks like. And I think that's one of the kind of major things that we come up against now in our programs. And I use that as a case study for the broader world, is that these boys, it really impacts many things, but in particular the resilience. You know, they're not exposed to, you know, even being exposed to death from a really young age and understanding the life and death that is part of the cycle of life. Having, you know, these sterilized existences up until a death does happen becomes a really shocking experience. But, you know, I think as much as we can get young people out into nature, the better. And it's almost so ridiculously obvious to say, but we're at that point in time now where particularly a lot of young people are more satisfied with their online lives than they are with their, dare I say it, offline lives. So we're at this point where we need to start to activate these conversations.
On the text line, Justin says, Josh, the term toxic masculinity is terrible, as it suggests that masculinity itself is toxic, and it makes conversations like this harder. If we said toxic femininity, people would call it out as being misogynistic, says Justin. Sean says, many years ago, a girlfriend told me she loved that I might have either grease or flowers under my fingernails because that's a typo, it must mean kitchen flour, as I loved mucking around with vehicles but was also just as happy in the kitchen making a pastry, says Sean. James says, Josh, male stereotype? Stereo is so out of date. It's time for the Dolby Atmos all-round sound male. That's a male who's an all-round nice person. It is that simple and that complicated. Doug says, afternoon, Josh, a man's man. My father was a great example. A dairy farmer, born in 1923, physically very strong from hard work, honest, where business deals were done on a handshake, respect for women, a deep love for mum, and us kids set an example for our marriages, showed emotion at appropriate times, looked after neighbours, always there to help, and very gentle with his stud cattle and other farm animals, a down-to-earth practising Christian man and a good cricketer. Yes, my dad wasn't perfect, but 40 years after his death, he's still my role model, says Doug. David in Wollongong, what do you reckon?
G'day, don't forget it's good to be a man. You can have one hat, one belt, one pair of shoes, and you can be happy. And guess what? You can lift heavy things and open your own jars.
David,
good to be a man.
Thank you for the call. There's a stereotype for you, Hunter. Men don't have fashion. We only have one pair of jeans, one hat.
The simple life.
I love it. It's 19 minutes past two. Hunter Johnson's with us, the founder of The Man Cave, which tackles the emotional health and intelligence of young men around Australia. Today we're talking about stereotypes of masculinity. What are positive ones? What are negative ones? Do we need them? Could we do away with them? I'd love to hear from you on the question. 1-300-222-702. On the text line, Jeff says, Les Patterson was a man's man's man. perhaps. Rob says, great show. One of the biggest problem the boys have these days is getting the you-know-what kicked out of them by the man-hating radical feminist types, says Rob. Sue says, Josh, a modern man, parents twins with his husband while broadcasting on radio and podcast. Oh, that's very sweet, Sue. Helen says, what does a young man bring to mind? One thing only, muscles. Okay. Dennis in Marrickville says, John Hamm, the lead role in Mad Men, comes to mind when I think of the stereotype of a man. Another person says, a good male stereotype is Stan Grant. Seriously, it's not a gratuitous suggestion. And Ben says, stoicism gets a bad rap in modern discussions around masculinity. Stoicism is a strength. Yeah, what do you mean by stoicism, Hunter?
Yeah, listen, I think you can go back to the, you know, the philosophical origins of the Greeks with stoicism, but really, you know, which I think actually is a fantastic foundational belief system for many people to have. I think we also got to recognize the Greeks were living in very different times to what we're living in 2023. But for me, it really just means the ability to, have a level of, assertiveness, discernment and emotional regulation that can allow you to be present and have your grounding and center to deal with the inevitable challenges that life throws at you. And what I think is, you know, kind of the next evolution on top of that is developing our emotional range, which is bloody hard because often, you know, unless you're in an environment that really, or a community or a friendship group that really cultivates the space for you to develop your emotional world or your vulnerabilities, it's a really hard place to practice that skill. And I really mean that as a skill. It's absolutely a muscle that can be cultivated similar to learning to ride a bike or learning a new language. And I think what's tricky is, you know, often coming back to that thread of toxic masculinity, I often don't use that word. And Josh, I know you're pretty hesitant around it too, because it does create some division. For me, I just swap that out with a phrase of intergenerational trauma, you know, and it's just what we witness playing out is, unhealthy expressions of, humanity that are often from men to men. And what we know is that, you know, post-World War societies have had to deal with the integration of wars and famines and recessions, when most of society wasn't equipped with how to deal with proper trauma.
Mm.
Now, I think we are, you know, in some ways the conversation gets opened up. It's like, have we gone too much the other way? Are we coddling people too much? Are kids too sensitive? Is there a lack of resilience? And I think that's like a call to action for all of us. You know, we're raising the next generation. How do we start to develop, you know, strong, well-rounded, grounded human beings?
Yeah. And I mean, of course that spans across both sexes, doesn't it? Because, you know, the coddling of an infant and the refusal to allow children to make mistakes and to get their hands dirty and to fall out of trees on occasion, you know, is something that has been written about and talked about with regards to boys and girls both. On the text line, one person writes, when I think of an aspirational man, I think of the concept of a Renaissance man. By being multifaceted, when they have the scope for the physically masculine man, the erudite man, and everything in between. Not only that, but it's an expansive definition that encompasses the scope of gender and ability. Yeah, I like that, Renaissance man. I think that young men now are much more involved with family life, writes Helen. Pushing a stroller, folding the washing, cooking the family meal, picking up a child from the sick bay at school, unheard of a generation ago. Congratulations to our young men, says Helen. My inspiring dad, writes another listener, was a dentist. Fixed all our cars, hung out the washing, made our school lunches, believed that women can do anything, came home at lunch to let mum have a sleep. A total gentleman with a heart of gold. Such a wonderful role model for both my brothers and I, that person writes. And Stu in Newport says, Josh, The Rescue, the film about the Thai cave divers, was the most positive view of different masculinity I think I've ever seen. That's interesting, Stu. Janie's on the line from the Upper Hunter. Janie, what do you reckon?
Hi there. I know we've got time running out. So I came from the country. So I was born, my sister and I were brought up to be, girls could do anything. So, you know, the typical boy archetyped, falling out of trees, falling off horses. We were given responsibility to go out and round up muster sheep at a very, very young age. So fast forward now, I had my children, my young my son is in his mid-30s and he's an inner city. So Josh, you described that sort of your inner city bringing, growing up. And that's what my son experienced. What I see with my son and his friends is that they are fiercely feminist, if you like, and very much Renaissance and very, very protective of being genderless, really, in the sense that they accept each other for who they are. Mm. And now, you know, it's, and I think Renaissance man is great, but I also, as I said to your producer, I think one of the pivotal things for me recently, and it was the Gina who won the Australian Survivor. Now, she was in nature, and she, the runner-up was a man, and she had devised her, I knew she was going to win from the get-go because of the way that she integrated nature and her approach. And I think to have well-rounded human beings, men, by the way, I thought of the Marlboro man, I'm afraid to say I'm a certain age, you know, but I love the Renaissance man and the poet of the, you know, the soul of the poet and the line, the heart of the line. I love that. But think about Gina and what we can learn from that experience and how important it is for boys and girls, but boys to be in nature and initiated, if you like, through living and appreciating Mother Nature. Because we treat her so badly. We commit domestic violence, if you like, against Mother Nature. And if boys can be taken through that sort of, I don't know, initiation, which is love the work Hunter's doing, and I make it compulsory to listen to you whenever I can.
Aww.
So that's my perspective.
Fantastic.
If that makes sense it does. To you both.
It does. Thank you, Janie. Thanks for the call. Yeah, what do you make of that, Hunter?
Yeah, I love that we're talking about the Renaissance man, and I think just, you know, many people would be more well equipped than me to talk about this, but, you know, the Renaissance man came out of the Dark Ages, and that was a time of huge, huge trauma for many, many people. And, you know, if we think about what was the primary education of the Renaissance men, it was really around literature and poetry. It was science, biology, and subsequently nature. They also studied cosmology and astrology, so the stars. And part of that was a big part. They studied wisdom texts, whether that was through a church setting or through the Hermetic teachings or Taoism, that they went over to the East and brought it over. And underpinning all of that was this deep connection to spirituality, of studying things that were bigger, more powerful, more influential, and more integrated than us human beings. And obviously that comes together through studying of nature, studying of the stars, and then studying of wisdom. So I think that is what I'm interested in, this kind of, this opening we're now seeing where organized religion is at this, you know, this tricky point. But there's an opening, there's a desire in humanity to search for fundamental universal truths that actually bind us and pull us out of our, you know, 9-to-5 busy agendas into something higher and greater. So yeah, I like that we're talking about the Renaissance man, and, you know, there's some fantastic role models of people who shaped humanity, aka Leonardo da Vinci, who was, I guess, one of the pinup figures of that time. You know, and but, you know, da Vinci was often, he was lost until he was about 45, you know. Everyone thought he was a crazy guy, and then suddenly got his big break, and then just the world discovered his genius. So I do think there is some second wave of that coming through. And there was a group of guys actually, early 1900s, led by Walter Russell. If anyone wants to look up Walter Russell, really interesting guy, was friends with Mark Twain. So the great literature people of our modern times, and they set up, basically character building institutions to try and bring back, values driven education alongside character development education, because they saw the rise of the Industrial Revolution. And I think we're at the next point of that story. There's some agitation that I think I definitely feel. I see it in the school system, that something is, you know, they say on the edge of agitation is breakthrough. So I think there's something starting to get spawned through that we're all kind of being drawn towards to help us through this next, you know, turbulent part that we're all feeling in humanity right now.
Hunter Johnson is with us from the Man Cave. In less than 5 minutes, we'll be crossing over to Queensland, and Queensland and New South Wales will join forces, and we will all be able to argue with each other about who has the best state. It's State of Origin tonight. We're expanding the criteria from just sport to everything. I want you to get on the phones, and you'll be able to talk to listeners all over Queensland, from the very top of the state to the bottom of the state. They will all be hearing your voice on 1300. 0422 702 702, as you go into bat and argue for why New South Wales is the superior state. You can hop on the phone lines now. We'll be kicking that off in about 3 minutes' time. Lenny in the Hunter Valley, in 30 seconds, what did you want to say?
Just quickly, yeah, the advice that my father gave to me was to think for myself. Don't follow the pack. Always have your own opinion, which obviously created divide there because when I grew up, I disagreed with him, so I was wrong in his eyes. You know what I mean? But yes, I've lived that and had a very fruitful life. So yes, good advice.
Good on you, Lenny. Thanks for the call. Great to talk to you, and thank you, Hunter. Great to talk to you as always.
Thank you, Josh.
That's Hunter Johnson, the founder of The Man Cave, which tackles the emotional health and intelligence of young men around Australia.
In just 7 days, I can make you a man.